Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
The shocking twist in the Brian Koberger case, the sudden decision to accept a plea deal and admit guilt. It has left the public, the victims' families, and even seasoned legal professionals stunned and searching for answers. While many are debating the legal aspects of this unexpected move, today we're diving deeper into the intricate psychology behind such a profound shift in Koberger's strategy. With us to explore this complex terrain, psychotherapist Siobhan Scott and author of the book Nightbird, get it wherever books are sold. Together, we're going to unpack the underlying mental and emotional forces that might have led Koberger to form fierce denial to accepting responsibility. We're going to discuss how isolation, fear, narcissistic collapse, even the intense psychological burden of a looming death penalty trial could possibly influence such a dramatic decision. So, Siobhan, let's just dive into this. We've been now watching this for almost 3 full years and have seen every possibility being thrown at the wall, from I like to look at the stars to naming literally 4 individuals, all of which have been cleared by the FBI. And now, once it seems all of the carrots and all of the sticks are out, Brian is finally saying, I did it. What's going on?
You know, I think it's a fairly simple thing that he initially probably was hoping, maybe in a fantasy kind of way, that his wonderful attorneys, so dedicated to him, were going to get him off. And being grandiose, he very likely believed that story. And it's become increasingly clear over the years that this guy's going to get the firing squad. If there was ever a person who deserved the firing squad in the state of Idaho, I think this was it. And so my guess is, you know, the lawyers tried the autism thing. Can we get the poor guy's autistic. Can we get the death penalty off the table because of that? I think they probably had a come to Jesus talk with him that, you know, this is going to be the worst possible outcome. There's just no way through this. And so I think he just made a decision that, you know, may not have been from some big internal shift inside him. He doesn't want the firing squad.
Very simple. Nothing too extremely deep. Just, well, okay. They just kind of methodical, kind of the way that, you know, his brain seemed to kind of work, at least from what we understand of, you know, the way that this allegedly looked like it was planned out, the methodics of doing it, all the mechanics of doing it, almost a mechanical decision of, okay, yep, the pitcher is out of water. It's out of water. It is dry. This is what we have to do now. Are you surprised by this? Are you surprised? I mean, we've seen so many cases where people, even when found guilty, just still stick to their story to the grave, basically. Mm-hmm. Are you surprised that Brian Koberger is one that has come out and now has said, yep, I did it?
You know, there's a part of me that was surprised, but then once I started reflecting, it's like, well, of course. I mean, if he was, and I think his attorneys are grounded in reality, they had to see that this guy's not going to get off. There's just no way. And firing squad is a scary thing. And their bottom line, their goal is to save his life, of course, to get him out if they can, but that wasn't going to happen. And so looking at it from that perspective, a lot of times these deals are done at the very last minute. And so I guess to me, it does make sense. It would have been nice if it had happened sooner.
And that is that's the thing about this whole moment. We're talking about literally less than a month before jury selection is about to begin. The trial going to be starting next month, supposedly, if it was going to happen. Why now? I mean, this was something that was requested by the Koberger team. This is not the prosecution deciding, hey, let's give him a plea offer. They came and asked for it and they gave it. If Bill Thompson was capable of doing that, why didn't he just do it at the beginning? Why didn't we attempt this 2.5 years ago rather than put everybody through this if we're going to even entertain the idea of offering this guy a plea offer? That to me just seems, I don't know, it seems crazy that it was never even floated early on to avoid all of this.
Yeah, agreed. I think that would have been certainly easier for everybody to adjust to rather than all the anticipation of this, what was going to be a horrendous trial for the families.
What's your take? And obviously, every family is dealing with this a little bit differently. We've heard from Steve Gonsalves and some of the other parents as well. The majority, I would say, from what we understand, are not in favor of this. There are some of the parents who are finding this to be a bit of a relief of a, okay, we don't have to go and be drugged through this. Certainly, it's got to be a relief to the surviving roommates who otherwise would have had to testify. But what's your thoughts on folks like Steve, who really, they wanted the trial. They wanted to see him go out and be put on trial and exposed for everything that he did. This kind of does seem like an easy way out to a certain extent. Is this fair to those families? Is this fair that they said, without any sort of real consultation, according to Steve, it was just a letter that was sent on Sunday night going, oh, by the way, we're going to take his plea.
Yeah, it would have been nice if the families had been allowed to be more involved in the process and be heard. And I think it's always frustrating when people feel like on a big emotional issue that their voice doesn't count. There can be a certain sense of satisfaction in having the puzzle pieces laid out and seeing the dots connected. And of course, understandably, they would like to see him suffer during the trial. They would like to see him squirm. They would like to see him called out on all the lies. And that's, I think, something that I hope can still happen to some degree, is that the pieces can be put together, at least for the families, on what exactly he did. And, I'm sure there are things at this point that we still don't know, that the public isn't aware of. And it's going to, I think, help some of those families get closure if they can have all that information.
There's certainly going to be a time for victim impact statements in the courtroom where the families are going to get to say their piece to Koberger. How he's going to react is really anyone's guess. This whole thing, the way that this is ending, is exactly how BTK ended his essential reign of terror right before the trial was supposed to go down. He did exactly this. He went on to court and said, here's exactly what I did. It's a 45-minute speech where he went into great detail. Now, that is not required here for this plea deal to go forward, but there will be an opportunity for Koberger to speak. Do you think we're going to see him say anything about this? Do you think we're going to see a single word, considering even when he entered his initial plea, he stood silent and then the judge just put in the guilty plea, considering how much the evidence looks like he looked up to these infamous killers and now he is one himself. Do you think he's going to follow in those footsteps? Are we going to hear the voice of Koberger talking about what he did?
It would be fascinating if he did. But at this point, you're right. He's presented as very stoic. And even though he has some commonalities, with BTK and the horrific crimes. I think he's does have that autism flair, that schizoid flair that I've talked about, where he's just flat, he's just shut down. And I think he gets his drama from working behind the scenes and engaging in his little fantasies. And I don't think we'll see much of a public presentation from him.
When we talk about the firing squad, because that was a very real possibility for him. But I am wondering, what was the biggest fear for Koberger here of going to trial? Was it the firing squad? Do you think it was the fear of death, or was it more fear of public humiliation? I mean, this is a guy who clearly did not fit in with most of the world, had a lot of issues with it, seemed to have a lot of vengeance towards the outside for the years that he was picked on as a child and bullied, and seemed to kind of hold that very close and would lash out at people, would be very cold, very unempathetic in many, many ways. Do you think that there might have been an element of, okay, it's almost showtime, you are going to be on stage here, and everything that you like to do in the background in your little secretive world, it's all going to be put on display? I'm wondering how much of that public humiliation and just the public looking at him for what a doofus he is, was kind of maybe a scary prospect. Because I think in his mind, he really thinks he's a genius. And this would have really, really shone light on that.
It's always possible. Hard to say. He strikes me as so emotionally cold and shut down that there was a part of him that might have actually enjoyed the attention, even if it made him look like a monster, which obviously it would have. As you say, he identifies with monsters. And so there's a part of him that might have actually enjoyed the trial. I've heard reports from other mass killers, certainly from some of the mass shooters, that they enjoyed the trial process and they enjoyed the victim impact statements as much as a normal person with empathy. We'd be horrified to think that we hurt people, you know, in the way that these killers do. But the killers often enjoy hearing about the pain that they've caused other people. That's why they're murderers. That's why they try to kill as many people as they can. They have a really different way of processing in the world.
Very, very much so. Catherine Ramsland finally has broken her silence on this case. She spoke to News Nation's Brian Enten just the other night about what she could on the case. There are still things she can't talk about because of, I forget the term, but it's like HIPAA almost for teachers and students, where there's certain things you can't discuss. But she was able to talk about her interaction somewhat with her feelings about him. And she came out and said there really wasn't any red flags for the most part. He seemed very much as a student of hers that he was very astute, very polite, very interested, very passionate, had the mental capacity to really get into the information that they were studying and contextualize it and dig deep into it. You know, I wasn't expecting her to be like, he was eager to kill and then just learned how to fly the plane up and not fly it down. It wasn't like that. What do you take? Are you surprised by that at all? Or is that kind of what you would think that this person would have been like if you were to look back on this retrospectively as if he had been a student or when he was a student?
Yeah, his craziness, his dark side all occurred internally in his head. I think even though people thought he was weird, nobody would have guessed he had the kind of violent fantasies that he had. And so a person like this is very good at compartmentalizing, at keeping it buttoned up, and playing a very polite, appropriate role, certainly with a teacher who's an authority figure.
Yeah, that's the interesting part of this. And I remember we had the conversation earlier on about Howard Bloom has the article out where he theorized, did he do all of this in some crazy way to try and impress Catherine? Catherine had mentioned something yesterday with Brian Enten about it, you know, being a little bit concerned looking back. You know, did he use what he was taught about the antisocial personality end of things, about how to plan a crime, how to investigate a crime? You know, is this someone who used that for all the wrong reasons? Not that it's something that should necessarily discourage her, but she did bring up, you know, we hope that most people that go through this, they come out the other side and they are going to go use this for good. They're going to go be investigators. They're going to go work in law enforcement, investigative work, whatever have you. But every once in a while, you know, there's going to be someone that comes through like this and uses it for the wrong reasons. When he set out to go down this path as being educated in criminal justice, do you think this was the goal? Was this a long-term goal of Koberger's when he went down that road?
I have said that from the beginning, that there's a certain percentage of people who study criminology, forensic science, because they want to learn how to be a better criminal and how to get away with that. You even see that sometimes in people who become law enforcement officers. It's like, you know, now I've got the power here. How can I wield this? How can I get away with it? How can I satiate my desire for beating people up and being a violent person? That's not the majority, but you do get people who go into it for the wrong reasons, and it's often not picked up if they're a good psychopath.
Yeah, clearly. What do you think is going through his mind right now? Is this genuine remorse that he, for what he did, and now he's finally coming out, or is this the I got caught? And as we talked earlier, it's this very mechanical thinking.
I think it's very mechanical. I don't think he's capable of remorse. Anybody capable of remorse would not have done a crime like this. My God, you know, how awful. Four sleeping college students. This guy doesn't have a conscience. He simply doesn't. I think his only remorse is that he left the damn knife sheath behind. He's probably perseverated on that one every day since.
Is this another thing we had talked about for a long time? Is this part of him basically getting what he wanted at the end of the day? He is now infamous. He is now up there with the likes of Bundy and the likes of BTK and all of that. And obviously in his normal life, he was a very, average dude for the most part, or less than, This is the one thing that he seemed to have grasped onto and feel in his mind that he was great at. Mm-hmm. Obviously not so much, but he's now in that chair, and he's now going to be studied. He's going to be interviewed. You know, who knows what he might do? He might write a book or something. He can't profit off of this. There's laws against that, but it doesn't mean he couldn't become someone who speaks and is studied. Even Catherine Ramsland just said with Brian Enten, she'd be interested in studying him and sitting down and talking with him and trying to get a grasp on how his thought processes worked. Do you think that's part of this? Do you think this is just, okay, he's making the best of whatever situation comes his way, and now he gets to be infamous?
100%. I think that was very, in large part, I mean, there were multiple reasons that he had these fantasies, but I think the fantasy of being a grandiose murderer in the leagues of Bundy and BTK, I think all along that was his goal. And there's a part of him that's enjoying it still, even, you know, four life sentences. He's never going to be out again. In his mind, it was worth it to be a person who will never be forgotten.
Is it, what can we glean? What can be learned from someone like Koberger, from someone who psychologically is going to study him, like a Catherine Ramsland? What are we looking for when we're looking at this retrospectively? Someone who has said, yep, I did it. Obviously, we can hear about his planning. We can hear about the logistics of what was done. But are we going to ever, this is one guy. Are there clues? Are there cues? Are there things we can learn from his behavior that can help prevent this in other potential Kobergers out there that pop up every now and then? What can be gleaned by studying him further?
It's a really hard one. I mean, we're, you know, can we dissect brains? You know, I don't think we're very good at the neuroscience of this yet. There are indications that people that commit crimes like this that are extremely psychopathic, their brains are different. They came out of the chute different. And can we hope to understand that better in, you know, someday in some way? Definitely. I don't know if the science is there yet. But it's hard to look at the behavior and say, oh, well, here were red flags, because there are lots of weird guys out there. There are lots of guys that are stilted, awkward, don't know how to relate to women, can come off as offensive at times. But there really wasn't anything that would have stood out in this case that said this guy is going to become a mass murderer. I don't think we can spot those things.
Short of doing brain scans, which, you know, I don't see that being anytime soon, but who knows? You know, and even if you were to look at that, I mean, there has been research done and such that does look at some serial killers, and their brains do look a little bit different to a certain extent. But you can also find people who are not serial killers who have brains that are very similar as well.
Every brain has differences. And and we do, from the studies with functional magnetic imagery, we do see that the brains of psychopaths have a very different structural connections between the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex. That's the empathy center. But a lot of people who do not become violent have brains like that. Mm-hmm. And we know that many psychopathic people go into politics and achieve great success or become salesmen and are very successful. So it's not like we can, you know, brain scan everybody in the country and go, oh, let's designate the psychopaths here. So we've still got a lot to learn, a lot to work out. And certainly there are red flags. If you've got a young boy fascinated with violent pornography, that's of concern. You want to get that kid into treatment. If you've got a kid that's harming animals, especially, you know, dogs and cats, not just hunting or things like that, but animals that most of us bond with, if they're cruel to animals, that's a red flag. But I don't know that we saw those things with him, you know, and there can be all kinds of hidden things about him that nobody ever saw. So if he were to be studied further by someone like Catherine Ramsland or others, I hope that we can glean some information on, are there other ways we can intervene with people earlier in life?
It'd be really fascinating if it is something that could ever be done like that. It makes me wonder a little bit about the tools that we have, because up until now, we've been relying strictly on observational skills of other people, of others, of experts in the area to be able to look at this and go, okay, here's what I see. Here's the demonstrations of the behavior. Here's how they present. Here's what we think is going on. With more technology and AI and things of that nature, it makes me wonder if they're going to have more things in the future in the world of psychological evaluation that can pick up on things that we can't, that the human beings cannot, to such a micro level that may show us trends or little ticks here and there that only these types of people seemed to, you know, react to. I don't know how that would be done. I don't know how that would be monitored. I'm just wondering, as we're going to see more and more advances in medical technology in terms of curing things, I wonder how much we're going to see in terms of diagnosing things, especially in the world of psychology and mental health.
Yeah, I would guess if we're fortunate enough to still have humanity 100 years from now and still be inhabiting the planet, that we will be doing a better job at catching things than we're doing now.
I want to talk about the family of Brian Koberger. They obviously have not spoken out very much at all since all this went down. We have reports that the family was a bit curious and a little bit worried that maybe their little boy is, in fact, this murderer, all the way to the fact that when he was at their house for Thanksgiving, the sister allegedly said, how do we know it's not him? He drives the car. He's wearing rubber gloves. This is a little weird. And then they checked his car. I mean, going as far as, it wasn't just, it's nuts. It's like, let's go look in his car. That's like, you really are thinking like this is it. And now you have the admission. I mean, how does that family begin to kind of wrap their minds around this? Or I wonder if they kind of already have.
Yeah, yeah. I would guess that this has been sitting, you know, with them for obviously since he was arrested. And to some degree, I would guess that they were prepared for it. But it's still got to be a horrendous shock to have it come out of his own mouth that, yes, he did it. Because probably at least for, I think the father was the one holding hope or the most resistant to the fact that he was indeed guilty. It's going to be a hard blow. You know, they'll never get over it. And I feel really, really sorry for his parents in particular and for the sisters who lost jobs because of the last name. I would definitely be looking at changing my name because that's a unique name and they're never going to get away from that.
Yeah, I would imagine that this is it's something that will certainly follow them for the rest of their lives. Unfortunately, they got to be looking back. I'm sure they have been, for years now at, you know, what were the signs? Like you had mentioned earlier, we don't know what they were. We don't know what he was like as a child. I imagine we'll find out more of that if people speak or if people dig into it. But that's got to be heartbreaking and helpless as a parent at the same time, because you would be wondering, did I do something wrong? Did, you know, was there an event? Do you think there was anything in Koberger's life? And this is just pure speculation that pushed him to go this far? Or is this more of just how he was wired from day one and the cards just happened to align this way?
Yeah, we certainly have zero evidence that he wasn't raised in a good home. I mean, apparently, you know, the parents seem like very normal, loving people who tried to do the right thing. When he had the problem with heroin, they got him into rehab. You know, he recovered from that. So they seem to be very, very normal people. And while some serial killers do have a history of abuse, many don't. And I don't think we have a good explanation for that. But I'm sure they are beating themselves up. Whenever parents have a kid that takes a dark path, they typically, if they're normal people, they go back over everything in the history and they tend to blame themselves for not catching things, not noticing things. And it's, you know, it's really hell. I do think that there are people who just come out miswired, and that's the part we don't have completely figured out yet.
Is there a benefit to sitting down and really digging in with him? And really trying to figure out what the heck happened here for the sake of future cases. Because I could hear an argument from the family going, you're doing exactly what he wants. You're giving him the attention that he wants. You're getting some of the best minds that we have that are already lining up to go and study him. Ramzan already said that she's willing to, like, basically, if I'm paraphrasing, but she's willing to, like, go have those conversations and try and study this. From a victim standpoint, yeah, it's like we're giving him what he wants, but is it for the greater good? Do you think this is someone who is capable of trying to tell his story and try to share where he's coming from? That would really be of benefit to anyone. Just your personal opinion on that.
I think it's a benefit to those of us who study this stuff.
Yep.
And we study it because we want to be able to prevent it. And that's different than going in with the agenda of, I just want to sell as many books as I can.
Sure.
So I think it depends on the qualifications of the person doing the interviews and the fact that they can ask the really important questions, the insightful questions, not just go in with lurid tales.
Mm-hmm.
But so I lean in the direction of, yeah, let's not make movies about him, because those tend to just be for attention. But more of a clinical approach, I think it is probably a good thing.
Yeah, and I know Catherine Ramsland won't be doing it for clicks. She'd be doing it strictly for the research and the amazing research that she has done. It's just kind of that double-edged sword there, especially right now when everything is so raw and the victims across the board from the families of the ones who were murdered to his own family, because they have been victimized in this themselves by their own son.
Very much.
And are trying to come to grips on this. Very fascinating conversation. I'm sure we have a lot more to talk about in this case. As it continues to develop, the sentencing will likely be taking place late in July, early August. We don't have an exact date on that, but we will probably find it out very, very soon as the hearing of Koberger and the plea comes in. Siobhan Scott, always thank you. Her book, Nightbird, check it out wherever you get books or audiobooks as well. As always, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.